Krishna has been describing his opulences or opulence. I think in English there's no such word as opulences. Because opulence is a plural noun. If I'm not mistaken, anyway. At the end of the ninth chapter, Krishna has instructed Arjuna to always think of him. And so, in describing his opulence, he's giving Arjuna, what should we say, food for thought. Right? If you're going to think about Krishna, you're going to have something to think about. And so, in describing his opulence, he's giving Arjuna something to think about, but as mentioned by Prabhupada, the Acharyas, by understanding Krishna's opulence, Arjuna then has a greater appreciation of his friend's personality and his greatness. His, you know, at the end of the Krishna book, Prabhupada, is that final chapter which is called Wonderful Krishna. It sort of gives a summary of all the things that Krishna's done. And, you know, sometimes when we say, well, that's Krishna, you know, just it sort of like just puts him in his pigeonhole and keeps him there. And that's just Krishna. But actually, just Krishna means everything. Right? He's not an ordinary person that we can just ignore. But Krishna is the Supreme Person with many, well, uncountable actually, Ananta, he's described as Ananta, unlimited opulence. That's why there's the discussion of Bhagavan as the possessor of all opulence. Bhagavan, which means one who possesses everything. And because of that wonderful character of Krishna, that makes him actually unknowable. God is unknowable. Certainly in form, anyway. We discussed this on Thursday. But we can know Krishna. And we know Krishna because he describes himself. He tells us what he's like. You know, he shares himself. Especially he shares himself with the devotees. So it's described how you know, the sages, the demigods, the very elevated patriarchs in the creation, they can't know Krishna. Or they don't know him. Of course, if they're devotees, anybody who's a devotee can know Krishna. But that's the qualification. One has to become a devotee. First and foremost, all of the other qualifications, and that's described here in the beginning of this chapter, the great demigods, the patriarchs, the sages, they can't, without being a devotee of Krishna, they even, despite their elevated and very exalted and advanced position materially, or even in the terms of knowledge, or in the terms of austerity, practice of yogic meditation and so forth, they can't actually understand Krishna. Nobody can. Without this qualification of being a devotee. And that's why Krishna says at the beginning of this chapter, you know, because you are my devotees and I'll reveal this information to you. Because, you know, if you reveal this information to the non-devotees, they can't understand it. Interestingly enough. Which is why we're... And then they criticise. Oh. Or they minimise. We minimise Krishna's position. We minimise... Actually, not only do we minimise Krishna's position, we minimise the position of the devotees. We minimise the position of the spiritual master in that kind of miserly mentality. Whereas the devotee, one who's thinking of Krishna, one who's actually a devotee, recognises Krishna's position, the fact that he has a relationship with Krishna. Also, he recognises Krishna's devotees and the value of Krishna's devotees because, as we'll discuss in these verses that we're going to read now, that in the association of the devotees we can actually get to know Krishna. Without the devotees we actually are lost. Most of us were lost without the association of the devotees. Or we're looking for something. Feeling some lack. So in the previous section, you know, there's a description. I am birth and death, infamy, fame and infamy, happiness and distress, and so many qualifications. Equanimity, tolerance, learned, or being learned, knowledge, and ignorance. All of these things, Krishna says, good and bad come from me. Yeah. So basically, that first section of the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita tells us everything comes from Krishna. Right? And then at the end of the section, we didn't touch on this verse on Thursday, the seventh verse says, if somebody understands Krishna's opulence, then what does he do? What's the answer? Anybody know? Here's a test, see whether you actually read it or not. Yes, but what do you do? What happens then as a result? Yes. Yep. Become a devotee. You understand Krishna and his opulence, and what do you do? Become a devotee. And then in the eighth chapter, Aham Sarvasya Prabhava, Mata Sarvam Pravartate Iti Mat Bhava Jante Mam. Buddha Bhava Samanvitaha. Who knows these four verses? 10, 8, 9, 10, 11. Who knows them all? Nobody. You know them all? You just read them.
Oh, that's good.
In a sense, that's knowing them. My suggestion to everybody is that you should learn these four verses. Because they're the seed verses of the Bhagavad Gita, basically. They're the essential teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. Huh? And the first one is everything. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate. Sarvam pravartate means everything comes from me. Aham sarvasya prabhavo. I am the source of everything. Everything takes its birth from me, Krishna says. Right? Everything comes from me. Repeats it twice. So, I'm sure these must be key memory verses.
Yeah.
Huh? Key memory verses. Should learn them. One of the reasons why I'm finding it easy to teach these verses is because I know them. It's always good to know your subject matter. Then you can teach it. It's hard to teach something that you don't really know. Yeah. So, and you know, yeah, learning, we should learn them to the point where we are consciously competent in reciting them and knowing their meaning. Do you know what that means? Have you heard of this? What is it? Unconsciously incompetent. Right? Unconscious incompetence means you don't know that you don't know something. And then there's conscious incompetence, which means I realise that I'm not very good at this. Then there's conscious competence, which means, you know, you're putting your effort into it. Just like when I first learnt to play the mridanga, I learnt by learning mantras, and you have to recite the mantra, tickety tickety pop. Right? But then eventually you can start playing the mantras for the beats without even thinking about them. Right? So that's where we want to get to. We want to get to the point of unconscious competence. Especially with learning some of these verses so that they become like second nature. Of course, then we can explain them easily. So, aham savasya prabhaval mata sarvam pravata iti matva bhajanti mam. Those who understand this, Buddha Bhava Samambitaha, those who are wise and understand this point, then what do? They become Krishna's devotees. So what does Prabhupada say in the purport? Who can tell me in one sentence what does Prabhupada say in the purport? Here's another test of whether you've read it or not. What does he say? One sentence.
Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the Supreme Deity, pure and unalloyed consciousness.
That's not exactly what Prabhupada says in the third book, I read. Sorry? No, he doesn't say that. What does Prabhupada say in the purport? What does Prabhupada quote in the purport? Everything emanates from him. He quotes a whole string of verses. Before there was Shiva, before there was Brahma, there was Vishnu. Vishnu is the source of everything. Krishna is the source of everything. Five or six or seven quotations Prabhupada takes from the Vedic scriptures to support this point that Krishna is the source of everything. He may say those other things about being fixed in devotional service, but I think he mainly concentrates, my reading over the last few years, he concentrates on this point. Krishna is the source of everything. Right? There's Gopala, Kapani Upanishad, and different Upanishads, Prabhupada quotes. You know, esoteric quotations from scripture that we never ever read. From the Vedas, basically. So just in case somebody was concerned about the fact that, you know, Krishna is saying that he's the source of everything and it's just being puffed up. Because, you know, there's plenty of people who say that I'm God and I'm the source of everything. But so just to confirm, you know, Krishna's statements, and Prabhupada quotes all of these Vedic references. Just to make sure that people get the right idea that this isn't a concoction, but rather this information is coming from authorised sources. Aham savasya prabhava, so Krishna is the source of everything. And that more or less just reinforces this point. This is Krishna's opulence, that everything comes from him. That's amazing. When you think about it. We all produce some byproducts, but none of us can claim to, you know, producing all of the universes. Our production of byproducts is a fairly meagre attempt at anything, really. So, then, what is the qualification of the devotees? What is the qualification of a devotee, more or less? What are the symptoms of these devotees? Matschitta. Again, what do? Well, they follow Krishna's instructions, manmana. Right? Think of me, matschitta means the same thing. They're always thinking of me. Matgata prana. They dedicate their life's energies to me. Or, as I think Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Krishna is their life. Right? It's another way to look at it. They dedicate their life to Krishna, or Krishna is their life. And how is Krishna their life? How is Krishna the life of the devotees? They were thinking of him, engaged their energy in his service. They like to discuss about Krishna. And that's how they get enlivened. That's that verse from the Bhagavatam that I often quote. Rasayanam Kata. The Kata, the Krishna Kata. The discussions about Krishna are like tonic for the devotees. Mama Virya Sambhido. What is that? What has that verse? Satam Prasangam. The association of the Satvatas. The people who are interested in the absolute truth. Satam Prasangam. Mama Virya Sambhido. The association of the devotees is empowered by me, basically, Krishna says. Mama Virya. My Virya means potency. Huh? Vira means heroes, right? Powerful hero, champion, right? So that power, Krishna's vira, if you like, potency, is endowed, or the devotees are endowed or given that potency, or empowered by that potency when they come together and hear and chant about Krishna. Which is pleasing to the ears. The discussions, the topics of Krishna consciousness are very satisfying and very pleasing to the ears of the devotees. Just like, you know, you can chant Hare Krishna in the morning. Sometimes, I don't know if you've experienced this, you've chanted 16 rounds, but still you feel a little bit jumpy. Right? But then if you sit and pay attention to the Srimad Bhagavatam, and if the Bhagavatam is spoken, you know, nicely by a devotee who's enthused and inspired in Krishna consciousness, and they reveal some aspect of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, then what happens? Become very peaceful. That's another verse. I can't remember at the moment. Srimatam Svakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana who knows that verse? Anybody know that one?
Hridayantastahya
Bhadrani Vidunoti Surit Satam, is it? Yeah. So just by hearing about Krishna is pious, and it destroys the abhadra, the inauspiciousness from the heart. What's the next verse? That's what I'm looking for. By regularly hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam and all that is inauspicious in the heart. Nashta prayesha abhadresha nitya bhagavata sevaya. By regularly hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, then the inauspicious things in the heart are dispelled, they're removed. This is what happens when we hear it. And you know, I remember when I first met the devotees, I was so happy to meet people who could answer practically any question that I had about spiritual life. Or they could shine some new perspective, new light on that particular problem that I was experiencing or difficulty that I had in understanding. So this is, you know, the association of the devotees is so powerful because in that, and that's why we need to respect the devotees so much, is because in the association of the devotees we get this opportunity to hear and chant about Krishna. And in that process of hearing and chanting about Krishna we become enthused and enlivened in our devotional service. Not only that, we get a clear perspective on what's going on around the place. We get the truth, in other words. That means we're able to distinguish the difference between spirit and matter. Right? When we're walking down the street, we can see this is a demon, that's a devotee. And we can see things. We can see, you know, there's the dog, there's the tree, there's the human being. At least theoretically we can analyse it and say, well, there's a spirit soul and there's the material energy at work, which is what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, right? The whole creation is just a combination of two energies, the spiritual and the material, right? So when we're walking down the street, we can actually see these things. If only theoretically we can at least appreciate the higher principles of spiritual and material working. So we learn that from the devotees. Effectively. Or initially. Right? In most cases. You know, every now and again, maybe there'll be somebody who gets direct enlightenment from Krishna. But that's actually quite rare. Yet, Krishna does reciprocate. That's the next verse. Right? So, Maschita Makata Pana Padayanta Parasparam Katayantas Charman Nityam Tusyanti Charamanti Char. We get our pleasure and we get our satisfaction from hearing and chanting about Krishna. And taking prasadam, and you know, there's a few things we have. Kirtan. But you know, a lot of these things, without the devotees, there's no relishing them, really. Right? There's no relishing kirtan without the association of the devotees. There's no relishing the philosophy of Krishna consciousness in its entirety and deeply without the association of the devotees. And in most cases, coming to Krishna consciousness is not possible without the association of the devotees. That's why we have to have that appreciation. Right, let's have a look here. Does anybody have any comments? Questions? On those points? I'll just have a look and see if I missed anything. Oh, yes. In the purport, in this purport, Prabhupada talks about the seed of devotional service, right? Brahmanda bhumite kona bhagyavana jeev guru krishna prasade poi bhakti lata beej. It describes how the seed of devotion, for the fortunate living entity, that's one of the reasons why we need to really appreciate the devotees. Because, it's, you know, without the association of the devotees, we wouldn't have got that seed of that bija of Krishna consciousness. We may have been longing or looking for something, but without the instructions of the devotees, we'd still be looking. We'd still be feeling empty. Who was feeling empty before they met the devotees? Maybe there's some sattvic souls who are fully self-satisfied before. But I know myself, I was feeling, you know, my life was just a mess. Empty and very just unfulfilling. I was totally unfulfilled. Then when I heard the kirtan and certainly when I met the devotees, then I found something worth living for. Before that, life was just I have to think of a term that's not that's appropriate, that's not coarse. It wasn't very pleasant. Life was not pleasant. Then when I met the devotees, then my life became meaningful. Basically because that seed of devotional service had been planted within the heart. And we need to water that. The process of devotional service means being given the seed of devotional service, and then being a gardener, basically, is described by Lord Chaitanya. We have to be a gardener. Now, if you're a gardener, there are certain things you do if you want to cultivate plants. Right? You put a fence around your garden, just in case some, you know, somebody comes in and just digs everything up. And of course, that's actually, that fence is keeping materialistic association out and maintaining good relations with the devotees. Especially because of our process is that we generally take shelter of a devotee, the spiritual teacher or the spiritual master, then especially we're careful at not offending the devotees. And especially the worst offence is offending the spiritual master. Right? Now the interesting thing is that in ISKCON, our spiritual master predominantly is Prabhupada. Right? Predominantly, for most of us, he's the founder acharya of ISKCON, so he's really the prime spiritual master. And yet, you know, we don't get a chance really to offend Prabhupada directly because he's not here. Right? But we can offend Prabhupada indirectly in so many ways by not following the processes that he's recommended and the practice of devotional service that he's recommended. And also that means being respectful to all of the devotees. Because in one sense, every one of the devotees represents Prabhupada in the practice of Krishna consciousness and the process of devotional service. And then, you know, there are different personalities within our devotional life who represent, you know, different degrees of Prabhupada's authority, if you like. So we have to be respectful to that system, that authority system that Prabhupada set up. Plus also that the time-honored system of parampara and taking initiation from a spiritual master and so forth. So all of these things basically are given to us by Prabhupada. When you think about it, we need to be respectful to all of those things in order to cultivate our devotional service. And Tim asked the other day, you know, what are anathas that arise from devotional service, right? And in the process of cultivating the seed of bhakti, labha, puja, pratishta, described by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this, Prabhupada mentions in this purport, that this cultivation of the seed of bhakti is described in the 19th chapter of the Majjha Lila, where Lord Chaitanya describes the process of devotional service to Sanatan Goswami when Sanatan Goswami went to meet Lord Chaitanya in Prayag, or in Varanasi. Right. So one of the, we fence off the garden, keep out unwanted association. Unwanted association brings with it material desires. Right? This is why it's you know, when we're working with the devotees, if we're working with the devotees, sort of that's good in one sense, because you know we're less likely to get influence of the mentality or the mood of non-devotees. But if we're working with non-devotees, we actually have to be quite careful, because their association, it's like contagion. You know, you can catch it from them unknowingly, pick up this disease of material attachment, material affection. Now, so we keep that out. And then within the garden, you know, we maintain our respect for the devotees and the process of devotional service, the spiritual master, and of prime importance, Prabhupada and all of his teachings, understand his mood and mission. But then, in the process of, you know, when you're growing your garden, you're watering the plants that you want to grow. But then, in the association of the devotees, there still can arise material desires. And this is labha, material profit, getting some profit out of your devotional practice, which can happen. You know, people come along and give you money, or they'll give you respect. Labha, puja. No, you're a great devotee, you're a wonderful personality. Yes. Pratishta. Puja. Adoration. praise, glorification. Right? So even in the association, okay, we keep out materialistic association, but even within the association of devotees, weeds can grow up still. Right? We still have attachments, you know, we have to be prepared to deal with those attachments. It's not pleasant, actually, it's not much fun. But, you know, anatta nivritti, removing unwanted attachments, is something that has to be practiced by the devotees. And we do it in the association of devotees, and we do it primarily through this hearing and chanting process. And especially when we're chanting Hare Krishna, cultivating this ability to discriminate, to see things as they are, and then to be able to discriminate between things which are material and things which are spiritual. And so then in the association of the devotees, avoiding the association of materialistic people, we have to then weed out some of these finer desires. It's more subtle. Desire for position, desire, because you know, what is Lord Chaitanya's prayer is, you know, I'm not a brahmana, I'm not a sannyasi, I'm not a vaishya, sudra, brahmana, none of these things, I'm just a servant. And sometimes we're reminded, you know, you're just a servant. Whereas we're thinking, hang on, I'm telling everybody what to do. Can happen. Or, you know, I've got such great realizations, I can see everything really clearly, so therefore now I can criticize you. Without looking at ourselves and seeing, you know, the mountains of faults that we've got. Sometimes as devotees we think, yeah, I can see the problems of everybody else, so therefore that means I'm more advanced than them. Without realizing that we're carrying a storm cart behind us. Or what was that statement in the Testament where Jesus said, you know, remove the log from thine own eye, remove the log out of your own eye rather than the splint of it in somebody else's. So, if one's successful in keeping out material association from outside, and also works on removing, now, and like we were discussing this morning in the Bible Talk class, by developing a strong attachment for Krishna and developing a taste for devotional service and devotional practices, then this other task, anatta nivritti, is easy, actually. It's easy because, you know, we don't feel discouraged when that cherished thing that we've been thinking and meditating about for so long, we realise, no, actually I should probably give this up. You know, because I've got something better. I don't worry about it so much. When we get a taste out of chanting Hare Krishna and serving Krishna, then we don't worry too much about the fact that we've got to give up other things. Because what we've got is so much better. But if we haven't been attentive to cultivating, you know, our attraction for Krishna consciousness, when it comes to giving something up, then it's like, this is the biggest obstacle, greater than Mount Everest, that we'll never ever climb it. It's really interesting, actually, because this is what happens, what I've noticed in Krishna, in my own spiritual life, predominantly, and also I've seen it in many other cases. If material attachments will come up, no doubt, guaranteed, practically speaking. And if one's become, and Maya's trick is to make us familiar with the process of devotional service, so we don't take it so seriously and we don't apply ourselves to it so strictly. Then what happens, by not doing that, by not facing those challenges, which will give us a strong taste for Krishna consciousness, then when we come to the point where we have to face our material attachments, it's very, very hard to stick to Krishna because this is becoming so prominent and we haven't developed that taste as strongly as we should have. Do you know what I mean? And so therefore then this is really hard to give up. And so we almost, you know, cling on to it. Because it's like part of us. It's me. It's who I am. You just have to accept me as I am. Whereas, you know, that little guy over there, a little demon basically, if we had concentrated on becoming the devotee that we could be through positive engagement in devotional service, then the little demon will actually become a little demon. And will go away eventually. So, Prabhupada talks about this cultivation of devotional service, and it comes to one who is very fortunate. And that good fortune manifests in the association Guru Krishna Prasad Puri Bhakti Lata Beej. We get that Bhakti Lata Beej by Krishna's mercy, Krishna Prasad, is to get the Guru, basically. But the Guru, and the Guru manifests in different ways. It may not be our, Guru just doesn't mean one person. There's the Vatma Pradashika Gurus, or usually the first person that we meet, who instructs us and guides us, encourages us in Krishna consciousness. That's called the Vatma Pradashika Guru, which means the person who shows us the way in the service. And as I've mentioned many times, the people who initially showed me the way in Krishna consciousness, they're not even devotees now, some of them. Yet we should still respect those people because they helped us to come to Krishna consciousness, even though they may not be the person that ultimately initiates us. But those people are, you know, valuable assets for us. I said, the devotee, my prime Vatma Pradashika Guru is a very simple devotee. He still is a very simple devotee, but he's still a devotee. Drives trucks in America. But whenever he gets into a temple, then all he does is engage people in devotional service. A friend, an Adi Krishna, just wrote to me and said, "Hey, Aniruddha, I met this devotee called Sikhi Pucha. And the first thing he told me that he made him a devotee. He said, the first thing he did was get me to help him pull out this sink out of the kitchen. And gave me for hours." That's what Sikhi Pucha's like, you know, he just grabbed you and said, "Hey, come here, do this." But he looked up, actually what he used to do is, Chitrup and I used to stay home on the weekends. We used to go to the temple. They used to come around our place on the weekends just to make sure that we wouldn't get in by house. He's a nice, very nice devotee. Simple, very simple hearted devotee. So, by the mercy of the devotees, we get the process that we get to practice devotional service. The main practice of that devotional service is the basis of it, is in our hearing and chanting with the devotees. So, katayantascha mamnicham tusyanticharamanticha. Right? Tusyanticharamanticha. That's where we get our taste in devotional service initially. Now, what happens if one engages in the process of devotional service? How does Krishna reciprocate with those devotees? Tesham satata yuktanam vajatam pritipurvakam dadami bhuti yogam tam jayamam upayantete. Krishna says, to those who are engaged in devotional service, tesham satata. What does satata mean? Always. Satata yuktanam, who engage in the process of devotional service. Dadami buddhi yogam tam. I give them the knowledge by which they can come to me. So it's interesting. You know, we reciprocate with the devotees, we reciprocate with our spiritual master, our siksha gurus, if you like. But Krishna also reciprocates with us. Because he's situated within the heart. And he reveals how we can actually come to him. It's interesting in the purport, Prabhupada says, you know, if a devotee isn't intelligent enough to take advantage of even if he has a spiritual association, I think even if he has a spiritual master, in the purport, Krishna, but he still applies himself to the process of devotional service, then Krishna will gradually reveal to him how he can come to him. To one who's constantly engaged in devotional service, Deshan Satati Yukta. Buddhi Yoga. Krishna mentions Buddhi Yoga in the end of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and it's mentioned here in the third one. Yeah, a person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization, but still, if he is not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. How is that possible? How does that happen?
Engaging in devotional service.
You engage in devotional service, then what happens? Sorry?
It says in chapter 15 that from me comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness, so we remember to do things that we should do, that you're giving knowledge, or we might be going to do something that we shouldn't do, and he reminds us of things that we should do or shouldn't do.
Yeah, well, sometimes, my experience, arrangements are made, circumstances are created by Krishna, where he gives us a big swift kick up the backside. Oh, wow. I should put my socks up. There's a qualification required to get that assistance from Krishna, right? It's not that we can just sit around and do nothing, right? And then expect, I'm a devotee. Krishna is going to give me the intelligence. Now, there's a qualification. The qualification is that a person always engage himself in Krishna consciousness. So, Prabhupada says here, it's almost contradictory in one sense. He says a person may not be intelligent, but at least he's intelligent enough to engage in devotional service. You know, half of our problem is that we're not even that intelligent. He should perform some sort of work for Krishna, and that work should be with love. So just a little detail, pretty poor to come, right? Has to be some affection for Krishna. Not, oh God, what have I got to do this again for? We do this every day. No, here we go. What's that called? What mode of material nature is that called? Ignorance or passion? Because passion is, attached to the results also. But devotional service, it's described in the Bhagavatam, in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, also I think in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, how devotional service can actually become tinged with the modes of material nature. So we're working for Krishna, but we're belligerent. You know what I mean by belligerent? Begrudging. And that's one of the reasons why Rupa Goswami in the Upadeshamrita encourages, enthusiasm, utsaha, nischaya, dharya, tat-tat-karma, pramartana. So, if a devotee is not intelligent enough to make progress on the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately attain to him, because Krishna is in the heart of the devotee and he wants to reciprocate with the devotees and encourage them. To show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with a shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. Tisham Ivanakam Paratam. Aham Magyana Jamtamaha Nasyam Yatma Bhava Stokyana Dipena Vasita. So, Krishna removes the ignorance of the devotee out of compassion. He sees the sincere endeavors of the devotee, and so then he helps alleviate them of their ignorance. Okay. So Krishna preserves what we have and carries what we lack, right? And this is one of the ways he does it. He reveals himself to the devotees, especially if they're engaged in the practice of devotional service. And this way he helps them make advancement. Right. Now, what I want us to do now is divided up into pairs. Right? And want you to share with each other your realizations about how discussing Krishna consciousness with the devotees is enjoyable. In what environment, in what context do you enjoy Krishna Katha? Yeah, it's a bit of a challenge for you. How do we enjoy it? Maybe you don't enjoy it. That's a problem. Yeah? So what? Share your realizations with one other devotee on how you enjoy and then how Krishna reveals himself through those discussions. So do that for 10 minutes. Choose the partner. Then we'll come back together and we'll share our realizations. We can tell what we heard from our partners. We can share that. Then we'll have 10 minutes or so of general discussion after that. Okay, so it's now nearly 11:30, so we'll go till 11:40, discussing in pairs. Okay? Choose your partner. The person that you're sitting next to, probably the most appropriate. If you're not sitting next to somebody, make your move now. Okay. Let's just go quickly around the room and hear from our discussions. What did you hear?
Me?
Yeah, I'm looking at you. You didn't have to have anything written down, just what did you hear from Prabhu?
Yeah, like how he likes Krishna Katha. He's a science student, so he likes the philosophy part where, not philosophy, the pastime part where Krishna is shown as a superhero.
Superhero?
Yeah, and the pastime is killing demons and all those things.
Likes a bit of excitement, huh?
Yeah. I want to see. Yeah. Being a science student, I always try to analyze and compare the scientific fundamentals and the Vedic philosophy. Then I come to the conclusion that Veda seems high tech.
High tech?
Yeah. And I refer to the Devamrita Maharaj's book, The Search for Vedic in India, where I got a lot more information about the high techniques in the Veda. Yeah. Comes into modern.
Yeah.
Then it shows the greatness of Krishna, because everything emanates from Krishna.
Mm.
So,
what is that feels like?
Huh?
What does that feel like?
Akhil, what did he say?
As a result, it enhanced my faith.
Yeah. What did Akhil say?
Akhil say?
Yeah, what did he say?
He says intimate relationship of Krishna with his devotees. He likes most. Krishna's relationship with Arjuna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's relationship with the high personality is so very humble. So there is no change in the qualities in any era. So he's very much fascinated by this relationship.
By the relationship?
Yeah. And the second part, how Krishna reveals. He said Krishna reveals through the devotees, non devotees, and Paramahamsa. And every time he feels realization, and Krishna makes arrangement every time.
Okay. Pretty, what did you hear from your partner?
She really enjoys the conversation of the devotees, and some of them are such a platform that everything they talk about, even the most unexpected circumstances and situations, they have a story related to Krishna.
Yeah.
And they can actually give you, so it's amazing how it also inspires you and also helps you to kind of think that you can connect with him and relate to him even in the most unexpected circumstances, the most mundane daily circumstances of life. And she enjoys going to retreats where you just totally at a different platform and everyone's just talking about Krishna, and then finds it inspiring when you hear about how other people came to Krishna consciousness.
Mm-hmm. What did you hear from Kuti?
We exchanged
What did you hear from her?
How everything in Krishna's consciousness in priority, even the devotee when they talk about Krishna, and we have very similar realization.
Similar.
Yeah. Have to repeat what she said in another way.
Pinky, what did you hear from Shunita?
Well, people didn't know that we have to give it for another resistance, because
what did you hear from her? How are you going to give it other than personally?
she said that her ego attachment rate decreases when she is a devotee.
Mm-hmm.
And when she is engaged in devotional service, she comes to know Krishna very clearly.
How? It's a good test because you have to listen to what that person said. We don't like to listen to ourselves. But to say what somebody else's realization is...
When she comes to the temple and attends the program, it's good for her because she doesn't find it too private. She's busy with her things at home. And when she comes on weekend, she finds it more relaxed, you know. So by doing some devotional service with devotees, it becomes a more happy. Then
she becomes happy, yeah. Relaxed.
Yeah. And how Krishna reveals that sometimes it happens. Sometimes it happens like we do something wrong, but we don't know about that. But when she comes in association with devotees and she talks about the things to the other, and then Krishna, by Krishna's arrangement, some pure devotee comes in and connects to her and tells her that she has done something wrong.
How does that make you feel? Embarrassed.
That's good that devotees tell you something what you have done wrong. That's really good. You should accept that.
That's nice. So Nathan, what did you hear from the Pinky?
More or less the same thing.
In your own words, what did you hear?
She said her material desires decreases. I mean, her attachment to material desires decreases when she's in association with devotees.
Pinky doesn't have any material desires. What about hearing, specifically hearing from the devotees? How does that work? Did she say it? No, you have to say, Sunita. Okay. Dale, what did you hear from Ramakund? I assume you were both talking to each other. Yeah. What was his realization in hearing from the devotees, hearing and chanting?
Ramakund says you get realization and we can see our own shortcomings.
Mm-hmm.
You become enthused when you hear about Krishna. And when we hear about Krishna's pastimes with like the cowherd boys and that, then we also become enthusiastic.
become a cowherd boy? Or is just enthusiastic to be a better devotee?
I don't know.
What did Dale say?
He liked hearing about the different battles Krishna fought.
Yeah.
And you know how he obviously he won in the end. And he said it is very, you know, just by hearing Krishna Katha, you know, it's very encouraging and, you know, it makes you more enthusiastic in your devotional service.
Mm.
That's the main point.
Anybody mention anything about humour?
We're all serious.
Only the cold weather makes everybody serious. Okay. Krishna exists within everybody's heart as the Supa Soul. And he says he gives us the intelligence by which we can come to him. How does he do that? Anybody have any realization of how Krishna directs them from within?
Yeah.
I realized that Krishna is telling us through devotees.
And through devotees?
Yeah, because it's hard to expect that we will understand directly by not having any association. My realization is that every conversation with devotees is, or sometimes even with materialistic people around us, can give us some clue. What is the solution to our inner thoughts or troubles, especially with devotees? And every time that you experience some problem in your head, then somehow in maybe even ordinary conversation about something else,
yeah,
suddenly there will be an answer to your problem if you have the time to contemplate about it later.
Yes. Yeah.
And then you will. One devotee told me that in every conversation you can hear Krishna.
Oh, hear Krishna.
If you are not maybe
you must be very Krishna conscious.
Krishna says that he's the sound in
But it's kind of I realize it can be an answer to your to what happened with you if you try to think about it.
Yeah. Who can think of an example from Prabhupada's pastimes of this point? From the Lilamrita.
When when he was in Jhansi, he got the telegram that he lost his business and he lost all the money. Then he
and all that Muppet,
yeah.
And so what did you do?
Then he thought, okay, so he remembered that verse, Harishye, Sardhanam Chai. So gradually Krishna takes away everything and now I can fully take it.
I can think of another example where Prabhupada had a heart attack in a hospital. And the devotees brought, they could only find one old drunk doctor that came to see him. And he said, oh, there's nothing wrong with the old man, he just needs more exercise. And so then Prabhupada started his morning walk. He was right, even though he's drunk. Then started, and you know, Prabhupada's walked every morning for at least an hour or close to it. And that was very important for his health. Basically very important for everybody's health. I've been reading a book called Brain Rules. Rules about the brain. The first rule is exercise. If you want to think better, then you should exercise. You can reduce the chances of getting dementia and Alzheimer's disease by about 60% if you exercise 3 times a week for 20 minutes at a go.
That's not much.
It's not much. No, how much is enough? How much is enough? Not much. The Prabhupada, Prabhupada needed to do it because of his health situation, his heart. But it actually helps you think better because you're expanding your blood vessels and so forth, so more blood flows through your system. That means more oxygen gets to your cells, which means they work better. So interesting, Prabhupada got told by the drunk, exercise more. And that's just a fact for everybody. If you don't exercise, we've noticed it with my sister-in-law. She has beginning stages of ulcer, and she just sits in front of the television all day long. Doesn't do any exercise. Has her three daughters running around doing things for her. But that's the worst thing in one sense. She's just blob it out. But then the brain stops working because it's not being nourished. Okay, well, how else does the super soul? What is it?
I've lost the brain saying that. But I'll say it anyway.
that's not like you, would it?
Okay, all through my teenage years, I grew up on the Hare Krishna farm. Krishna's everywhere when you're a Gurukul, but all through my teenage years, when I wasn't so Krishna conscious, I could see signs of Krishna around every corner. A few months before I moved into the temple, I was on the farm. I used to go to the farm to Sunday feast. I didn't do any devotional service other than chanting the holy name for
and taking prasadam
for many years. And I was getting really inspired to take up Krishna consciousness seriously. I was getting curious in my desire was becoming strong. And one Sunday feast, I was sitting next to this young Gurukuli and one of the devotees there called out for help serving. And I haven't served in 7 years, but I was just inspired. I just got up and said, yeah, I'm going to serve out. I'm going to serve the devotees, prasadam, And then the boy asked me to sit down, and I said, to sit with him, and I sat back down, and I said, nah, I've got to go, something's making me, I've got to do this. And I got up and I served out, and one devotee was so happy to see my service move that he invited me to come to Cairns with him a few weeks later, and paint a house with him, and then he actually encouraged me, inspired me to move into the temple. So it was just from that one tiny bit of service, Krishna reciprocated so much, I came to this temple, and everything fell into place, so.
May Krishna continue to inspire you to jump up. Get into it. Prabhupada says, don't hesitate. We're in the purport of verses 4 and 5, Prabhupada says, if your doubts have been removed, or I'm paraphrasing this, it doesn't say exactly what it is, but if your doubts are removed, then don't hesitate to engage in devotional service. Don't be mental about it, in other words. Do it. Yeah, and it's interesting because Mahamantra, that devotee, himself is not a temple devotee as such.
No.
But actually he's quite a staunch devotee, Mahamantra.
Yeah.
And you're not the only person that he's actually influenced simply by just his genuineness as a devotee. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
He made Gokul become a devotee because of Mahamantra also.
Yeah, that's what he told me, that story.
Yeah. And Gokul, Mahamantra was just his friend, basically. From Geelong. Geelong's definitely not Goku. that's nice. Anybody else? How does Krishna inspire them as the super soul?
I find that these little things remind me of one of the silly things I'd done before I'd become a devotee. Before I started chanting and associating with devotees, and that really makes me want to take devotional Krishna consciousness seriously, and make something of it, actually give it a go. Yeah.
The first time I bought a Bhagavad Gita, I'd decided I'd buy a Bhagavad Gita from the Haris that I'd knowing Harris at that point, because of a previous book I'd got. I went into the bookstore and they all looked as though they were written by mental speculators. So they say, well, Krishna may have been like this. And I thought, he may be like this? What do you mean? So I figured, you know, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. So I thought, you know, the Harris talk about bucket gears, so I might as well buy one of them. So I came across a book distributor about a week later. And I figured, well, you know, they talk about a bucket of gear, that means they probably sell one. So he asked if I'd like to buy a book, and I said, oh, do you have the Bhagavad Gita? So I bought the Bhagavad Gita, and I walked up to the Botanical Gardens and sat down to read. And I just read just the translation of any of the purport or any of the other stuff. And after about an hour or so, I was around chapter 8, and bird pastoral right in the middle of the page. And I kind of wiped a bit of it off, but it was starting to lose text, and I thought, oh, well, you know, God wants to pass through in his, you know, bird pass through in his book, that's his problem, not mine. So anyway, I went home and I started going to the loft, and after a while I finished reading the book, the Bhagavad Gita, and I figured, okay, I might as well did that age old effort, attempt of, you know, what should I read now, putting the spine on the book and letting it open up. And because of where the bird had passed through, the pages are dried up, and it always opened at chapter, verse 1 of chapter 8, Attaining the Supreme. So I thought, well, that sounds very auspicious, because that's, you know, kind of what I'm looking for. And so I started reading I read the whole chapter, and it basically chapter 8 basically says, you know, there's a whole heap of different ways you can get to him, most of them are pretty complicated, maybe you'll die here, maybe you'll die then. If you don't devote it, you don't have to worry about it. And I figured, well, and Prabhupada had also spoken about in his books about devotional service, and I kind of figured, well, a devoted football fan, it's not enough for a devoted football fan to sit on the sidelines and chant the names of his team. He's got to get out on the field. So I figured I would start doing devotion. So I went around and I started helping out in the kitchen. So in a sense, you could say the reason why I started performing devotional service was because of bird pastoral on the Bhagavad Gita. So in a sense, you could say that that's part of another way that Krishna can speak to you.
Anything else? Adam.
Yeah, sure. I was just reading this Surrender Unto Me and Gurujan Kapoor cites Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And he's commenting on how Krishna is saying, you know, I personally give that person the understanding by which they come to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a sense, like, all the progress that we're making on this path is Krishna's message.
Mm.
Like, you know, it's the super soul is the next door neighbor to the intelligence. And so if we're, like, all the time, you know, you're thinking, oh, probably best to wake up today, or, you know, because, you know, I've got to turn my rounds, and no, I'm not, like, whatever it is, like, all the things that are inspiring us on this path is Krishna's making.
Yeah. So it's Krishna's inspiring us every minute of every day.
Mm.
Oh, I thought I was doing that. Yeah, that's good. That's very good. That's how Krishna inspires us, by revealing these things all the time. Hmm. All right, I think we finish here. We'll see you again on Thursday. Next section of chapter 10.